Welcome to NTD Evening News. Updates in the ongoing Trump trial. The former boss of the National Enquirer resumes his testimony today. Plus, both sides argue on whether Trump violated the gag order and why Trump thinks the order is unconstitutional. Anti-Israel protests take a violent turn overnight. Police arrest over 130 protesters at New York University as unrest escalates on college campuses across the country. Fiona G reports. And how Trump is reacting to President Biden's comments on the campus protests. Iris Tao has more on that. Plus what Biden said about abortion while campaigning in Florida. The Senate voted to advance the $95 billion foreign aid package, which includes a bill that would force TikTok to divest from China. Final passage could come as soon as tonight or tomorrow. Jack Bradley on Capitol Hill. And Israeli residents scramble for cover while celebrating Passover on the beach. This comes as mass graves are reportedly discovered in the Gaza Strip. Jason Perry reports.
This is NTD Evening News, live from our NTD global headquarters in New York City. Here is Tiffany Meyer.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us tonight. Day 7 of the historic campaign finance trial against former President Trump. The former National Enquirer boss returned to the stand, but not before both sides argued about the prosecution's request for gag order sanctions. As he left the courthouse, Trump said the gag order is unconstitutional. NTD's Arlene Richards brings us the update.
After attorneys debated whether former President Trump violated the gag order, former National Enquirer boss David Pecker returned to the stand. The judge did not make a decision on the gag order, but Trump commented on it this afternoon.
Well, I think the gag order is totally unconstitutional. Can't even allow articles to be put in. As an example, these are articles that were over the last day and a half. They're very good articles. They say the case is a sham and it shouldn't even be tried. It shouldn't have been submitted. And I don't even know if you're allowed to put them in. We have a gag order, which to me is totally unconstitutional. I'm not allowed to talk, but people are allowed to talk about me.
Pecker was granted immunity by prosecutors to testify about his so-called catch-and-kill strategies. Monday, Pecker candidly explained, "We used checkbook journalism and we paid for stories." He said during the 2016 presidential election, he purchased the rights to the Stormy Daniels affair allegations in order to shield Trump from embarrassment. Prosecutors are looking to establish that this case is about election fraud and that Pecker purchased damaging stories to benefit Trump while he was running for president. In the indictment, prosecutors did not identify any underlying crime that Trump was allegedly trying to cover up, which is required in order to elevate the 34 counts of financial records fraud to felonies. Through Pecker's testimony, prosecutors, for the first time, attempted to introduce an alleged conspiracy under New York election law, which prohibits conspiracies to promote the election of a specific candidate through unlawful means. The defense objected to the testimony, and the judge stopped it. Trump has said that Judge Juan Merchan is taking him off the campaign trail. The presumptive GOP nominee commented on the Pennsylvania election this morning.
So thank you very much. It's a big day in Pennsylvania, and we hope the people get out there and vote. It's important to vote to let them know that we're coming on November 5th. We're coming big. Today is preliminary, but still it's very important.
Pecker testified for just over 2 hours in the last 2 days. The judge is expected to rule on the gag order sanctions by Thursday. Arlene Richards, NTD News.
Pro-Palestine student protests now descending on Washington Square. This after student protesters last night scuffled with police on New York University's campus. A professor of NYU's Stern School of Business says too many students are being manipulated by pro-Palestinian TikToks. NTD's Fiona G has more.
In a letter to the NYPD, NYU school officials say protesters ignored requests from the university to disperse and broke through school barriers. Protests on the campus turned violent as demonstrators threw bottles and chairs at police officers. At least 133 individuals were arrested and charged with trespassing. Plywood fortifications were seen being erected around the NYU campus today. Protests also continue at Columbia University. Police received reports of flags being ripped out of Israeli students' hands, but no reports of physical violence. The school has announced that all classes on the main campus will move to online or hybrid instruction for the rest of the semester. Critics are calling for the resignation of Columbia University President Manoush Shafiq. They say she is incapable of protecting Jewish students and regulating the conflict. At a news conference earlier today, Mayor Adams stated that he believes the anti-Israel protests are attracting unrelated parties who take advantage of the chaos to incite violence. He said not all protesters are from the student body and that the right to peaceful protest does not include the violence witnessed last night. He also emphasized the NYPD's commitment to protecting the public.
The number of bottles that were thrown, chairs thrown at them, people who peacefully protest for an issue, they're not throwing bottles and chairs. And so we know that we have acknowledged and saw across the country, there are people who come, have nothing to do with the issue, and they want to aggravate. Why is everybody's tent the same? Was there a fire sale on those tents? There's some organizing going on. You know, there's a well-concerted organizing effort. And what's the goal of that organizing? That's what we need to be asking ourselves.
Unrest continues at colleges across the nation. Protesters remain on Yale grounds one day after 45 demonstrators were arrested. Similar anti-Israel events are happening at Harvard and MIT. Activists not affiliated with universities marched towards NYPD headquarters last night with flares. Fiona G., NTD News.
And the campus protests sparking a new fight between Trump and Biden. While one calls the protests a disgrace, the other is trying to strike a careful balance. NTD's White House correspondent Iris Tao has the details.
Former President Trump on Tuesday speaking out against anti-Israel protests on college campuses and blaming them on President Biden.
What's going on at the college level and the colleges, Columbia, NYU and others, is a disgrace. And it's really on Biden. He has the wrong signal. He's got the wrong tone. He's got the wrong words. He doesn't know who he's backing. And it's a mess.
Trump's criticism comes after Biden on Monday said,
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians.
That says President Biden is facing pressure from some of his own voter base over his support for Israel. And another issue at the center of the 2024 presidential race, abortion. And President Biden in Tampa, Florida on Tuesday again targets Trump specifically over a six-week abortion ban that's set to take effect in Florida in just a few days.
There's one person responsible for this nightmare, and he's acknowledged and he brags about it, Donald Trump.
Meanwhile, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on Tuesday slammed Biden's visit.
Floridians are not buying what Joe Biden is selling, and in November, we're going to play an instrumental role in sending him back to Delaware where he belongs.
And Biden's campaign is now calling Florida a battleground state. That's a sign that Biden is eyeing Florida, a state that voted for Republicans in the last two presidential elections. Reporting from the White House, Iris Tao, NTD News.
The Senate voted overwhelmingly today to move ahead with a foreign aid package that the House passed over the weekend. NTD's Washington correspondent Jack Bradley has the update.
This is a $95 billion foreign aid package that passed the Senate with 80 votes in favor and 19 opposed on the first floor vote. It will soon reach President Biden's desk, where he vows to sign it. The package provides $61 billion in funding for Ukraine, $26 billion for Israel, and over $8 billion for Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific. The package also includes a bill that would force TikTok to divest from its Chinese parent company, ByteDance, or be banned from U.S. app stores. It's due to national security concerns, as Chinese law requires TikTok and all Chinese-based companies to turn over user data and their personal information to the Chinese Communist Party. The foreign aid package cleared the House over the weekend. Recently, there have been calls to remove Speaker Mike Johnson as House leader in spite of this aid package. The Republican members in opposition say securing the southern border should take precedence over sending financial assistance to foreign countries. Jack Bradley, NTD News.
Residents in Israel were celebrating Passover at the beach when alarms sounded, sending many running for cover. It's now almost 200 days into the war in the Gaza Strip, and Iran-backed terrorist groups are still able to launch attacks into Israel. NTD's Jason Perry has the update.
On Tuesday, Israel Defense Forces reported striking a significant member of the Iran-backed Hezbollah terrorist group in Lebanon. The IDF also reported striking other places in southern Lebanon, including Hezbollah terrorist infrastructure. Meanwhile, in Israel, residents who went to the beach to celebrate Passover found themselves running for shelter as alarms sounded. This comes as Hezbollah reported launching its deepest attack in Israel since the war began and struck an Israeli military base. But the Israeli military said it had no knowledge of any of its facilities being hit, only that it had intercepted two aerial targets off Israel's northern coast. Also on Tuesday, terrorists in the Gaza Strip fired rockets into southern Israel. According to a local government official, Israel intercepted all four of the rockets and no injuries were reported. Israel also reported striking several terror targets in the Gaza Strip, including operational tunnel shafts, military structures, and a launcher containing rockets that were ready to fire toward Israel. The IDF said they warned civilians to temporarily evacuate from these areas before the strikes. And reportedly, an Israeli airstrike on Monday hit a tent in the Gaza Strip. This Gaza resident, who's been residing in a tent, shared her thoughts on the situation.
I hope that the war will stop and that there will be a truce soon, God willing. I do not sleep at night for fear for the children that a shell or missile will hit near us.
And in another development, the Palestinian Authority reported finding several bodies in a mass grave near a hospital in the southern Gaza Strip. The Palestinian political group said the bodies were discovered after Israeli troops left the hospital. The IDF said they had intelligence that hostages were buried next to the hospital and that Israeli troops examined the corpses in an attempt to locate the bodies of hostages in a respectful manner. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel said the reports of mass graves in the Gaza Strip were troubling and that the U.S. is working with Israel to gather more information. Jason Perry, NTD News.
Coming up, U.S.-Israeli relations continue to be rocky amid the war in Gaza. An Israeli lawmaker joins us to share his thoughts on the Biden administration's response to the war. A judge is reportedly dropping charges against more than 100 illegal immigrants who allegedly stormed the Texas border. They are now being released from state custody. And the British Parliament passes a bill aimed at deterring illegal immigration. It would allow the government to deport any illegal immigrant, regardless of origin, to Rwanda. More when we return. Welcome back. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Earlier, we spoke with Ohad Tal, a member of the Israeli parliament who sits on the Security and Foreign Affairs Committee, for his thoughts on the Gaza war as well as the U.S. response. Ohad Tal, thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Now, Iran attacked Israel directly for the first time 10 days ago, while Israel and its allies shot down 99% of the drones and missiles. This was a major escalation. Does Israel see this as a red line? Has this changed Israel's security strategy?
First of all, 100%, you're right. For the first time ever in history, Iran decided to directly attack Israel. Not just Israel, basically Iran never directly attack any of its rivals. Usually they're only using proxies. We all know the biggest supporters of Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Houthis in Yemen, of course Hamas and Islamic Jihad in Gaza and in Judea and Samaria. And for the first time they decided to directly attack Israel. I believe that this is because they thought that Israel is weak. I think the reason, the biggest reason that they got this bravery to directly attack Israel and that they thought Israel is weak is because they're seeing what is happening in recent weeks and months to the relations between Israel and the U.S. They see the administration not supporting Israel. They thought that Israel is isolated, and this is why they directly decided to attack us. Of course, I think that at the end of the day, it actually showed their weakness, because many of the countries in the region here, in the Middle East, if it's the Saudis and other countries, at the moment of truth, decided to support Israel and didn't support Iran. And I think that showed the weakness of Iran.
On that last part, what is the strength of the regional allies, if you will, of Israel in the region? Who helped shoot down these drones and missiles from Iran?
So I can only say, of course, what was published already on media, but of course, you all know that the Emiratis were supporting us, the Jordanians and the Saudis. But of course, there's, I think what you can learn from that is that at the moment of truth, the countries here in the region understand exactly who is their friend and who is threatening, not just Israel, who is threatening their security just as much. Iran is not just an entity who desires to be a regional power. They actually desire to be a global superpower. This is their aim. I mean, you all know that they call Israel the little Satan. People in America has to understand, we are fighting your war because they call America the big Satan. Israel is just the forefront of this war, but they actually want to destroy America. This is their goal, this is their aim. And unfortunately, the current administration does not understand that, but that's the reality. One thing we've learned from October 7th is to listen to what our enemies are saying, to believe what they are saying. They want to destroy America. They call death to Israel and death to America each and single day in Tehran. This is their real aim is. And I think that it's time also for the Biden administration to wake up and realize what is actually happening.
On that note, last week on with us, we had Amit Halevi, who is a member of the Israeli parliament. Now, he told us, quote, the real mission of our generation is to take out the Ayatollah regime in Iran. Is this Israel's official stance?
Unfortunately, I don't think the answer is yes, at least not officially and not publicly. This is we're not putting it out as a goal, but I think the time has come for that to actually happen. I think for too many years, Israel were too busy in other directions, but now the time has come to really put a stand to that threat, which again does not only threaten Israel, but the entire Western civilization. We have to stand up against them. By the way, you have to understand, most of the Iranian people is a peaceful people. For many years, they were the biggest supporters of Israel in the Middle East before this regime came. And the people of Iran are suffering from their own regime. So now the time has come to end this wicked regime and to eliminate it and to take away the threat from our neck.
On that note, the Biden administration has seemed to be quite clear and it doesn't want a conflict or escalation with Iran. What will Israel do either with or without U.S. support?
I think the Biden administration is very confused. I mean, we've seen the rise of anti-Semitism all over the country in the States. We've seen it happening in all campuses, in so many campuses in America. In Columbia University, a Jewish professor, the administration of the university stopped him from entering the campus while the Hamas supporters, they were allowed to do whatever they want. The Biden administration, instead of dealing with the anti-Semitism within its country, he's now dealing with posing sanctions against Israelis, just like myself, living in Judea and Samaria. They're busy with sanctioning IDF units. That's great, as if Israel is not a close ally of the United States, as if we don't have our own court system to take care of any behavior which is not accepted and it's not according to the law. That actually makes no sense. I mean, Israel is now at war, fighting for our existence. And the fact that the Biden administration does not understand the reality, that he's busy with dealing, not backing us, and actually putting brakes on our ability to fight our enemies, instead of supporting its closest ally in the Middle East, the only democracy in the Middle East, I think that's a confusion, that's a lack of morality, and that, I think that that will cause also problems and big problems to America's just as much, because radical Islam all over the world see what happens here. And he see the weakness that America is showing, and I think America will also, unfortunately, will pay the price for that.
Ohad Tal, thank you so much for your time.
Of course, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Has the world forgotten October 7th, Israel's 9/11? Kelly Wright traveled to Israel to speak to survivors and hostages' family members. They vow never to forget as they combat anti-Semitism and fight for freedom. Watch Hope for Israel, an NTD News primetime special on Friday, April 26th at 10 p.m. Eastern here on NTD. Over to immigration news. A group of over 100 people who allegedly stormed the Texas border are reportedly being released from custody. Meanwhile, a judge declared a mistrial in the case of a rancher accused of fatally shooting an illegal immigrant on his property.
75-year-old rancher George Allen Kelly is accused of shooting and killing an illegal immigrant on his property in January of last year. Kelly has been charged with second-degree murder, but the judge in the case declared a mistrial Monday. This came after jurors failed to reach a unanimous decision after more than two full days of deliberation. Earlier in the trial, the prosecution suggested that Kelly's threat response was not proportionate.
And without verbal warning, without a shout, without any indication to both Gabriel and Daniel, points that weapon at these two men and shoots over and over and over again, nine times.
Kelly's defense argued that the sheer number of illegal crossings near and on the property became a threat, which is why the rancher armed himself. The county attorney's office can now decide whether to retry Kelly for any charge or drop the case altogether. A status hearing is scheduled for next Monday afternoon. And in related news, a Texas county judge reportedly dismissed charges against 140 migrants who allegedly stormed the border and caused a riot. The incident made nationwide headlines earlier this month when the group overwhelmed National Guard troops. Authorities then arrested over 100 individuals. The El Paso Times reports that the judge commented, "I don't believe there is probable cause for these individuals to continue to be detained for the offense of riot participation." The individuals will now be released from state custody but are still facing federal charges for illegal entry into the U.S. They will reportedly be turned over to federal custody. Virginia Gibson, NTD News.
And across the pond, the UK is planning to deport illegal immigrants regardless of origin to Rwanda. The British Parliament just passed the bill on the heels of a tragedy this morning. NTD's Malcolm Hudson reports.
Five people, including a seven-year-old girl, died trying to cross the English Channel in a small boat this morning. It comes just hours after the Rwanda bill, aimed at deterring immigrants, cleared Parliament and is now due to become law. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said the tragic incident underscores the need for deterrence.
A French regional prefect said the boat set sail with 112 people on board. The engine stopped working and several people fell into the water. Despite the situation, the French prefect said 57 migrants refused to be rescued and continued on to Britain. Sunak said nothing will stand in our way of getting flights to Rwanda off the ground. Preparations for the first flights will begin within days. Asylum seekers who could be relocated are being identified and potentially detained. Charter planes are expected to leave in 10 to 12 weeks, with Sunak promising multiple flights a month. Malcolm Hudson, NTD News, London.
Coming up, the Senate votes to advance the foreign aid package as GOP hardliners argue that funding should go to the southern border first. A retired colonel and security policy expert joins us to discuss the balance. And Starbucks fired 7 workers, and now it's before the Supreme Court, alleging government overreach. What the arguments are and the implications for other businesses, that's coming up. Welcome back. If you're just joining us now, here are some of today's top headlines. Former President Trump's campaign finance hush money trial continued with a hearing on whether Trump violated the gag order. The judge did not make a decision. And after the hearing, former National Enquirer boss David Pecker resumed his testimony. President Biden visited Tampa, Florida to condemn the state's 6-week abortion ban that will soon go into effect. Biden's campaign has made abortion one of its priorities and blamed Trump for overturning abortion access. Over 130 people were arrested at anti-Israel protests at New York University as the school asked the NYPD for help in dispersing the crowd. Protests also continued at Columbia University as the school moved all classes to hybrid instruction for the rest of the semester. The Senate voted to advance the $95 billion foreign aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. The package also has a provision requiring TikTok to separate from its Chinese parent company. It's unclear when the final vote will be, but it is expected to pass. Joining me now to discuss the foreign aid package is retired Colonel Grant Newsham, senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy and author of When China Attacks. Grant, thank you so much for joining us. Now, the Senate has advanced the $95 billion foreign aid package that passed in the House on Saturday. Now, the lion's share of the aid goes to Ukraine and Israel, with $8 billion going to Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific. Given the tensions we are seeing around the world right now, is this aid in the U.S.'s interests?
Oh, I think it is. I think America's got a very big interest in what goes on in Ukraine, obviously Israel as well. And in the Western Pacific, Taiwan is the linchpin to a lot of things. So I think the money is needed. But of course, there's more things that we need to do. We may be over-focusing.
On that point, GOP hardliners in the House are saying the funds should go to the U.S. border first before continuing to support overseas conflicts. Could both be true in that the U.S. does need to focus on its own border while also helping international partners? How do you read this?
Well, sure, there's a commonsensical aspect to it as well. If you're paying attention to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, thinking that you're defending against Putin, against Islamic terrorists, against China, and at the same time, you're not paying any attention to your rear area, to your southern border. You're allowing 10 million people to come in unvetted. Many of them you know are from countries that want to cause you trouble. This is stupid. So I say it doesn't take a geopolitical expert to figure this out. I would note that the GOP representatives who oppose this, I'm not sure I would call them hardliners. I would say they're simply commonsensical. And this is something that from a military perspective doesn't make any sense at all. In fact, it almost seems like we would want to lose if we're not guarding our rear area or paying any attention to it, really. Plus the social problems that come of letting in 10 million unvetted invaders into the country who cut the line on people who wait patiently. Now, that's something that's very hard to figure out. And I understand the opposition to the $95 billion bill.
Now, Secretary of State Antony Blinken is off to China for his second visit. This is after he highlighted China's human rights abuses in an annual report. Now, recently, he said that China is, quote, the primary contributor to Russia's military-industrial complex. How much of a role does China play in the Russia-Ukraine war?
Oh, a huge role, and they have from the very beginning. It appears that Xi Jinping may have even given Putin the go-ahead from the very beginning and said, yeah, we'll support you. And also propaganda-wise, politically, we'll give you this support. We expect you to pay back the favor when it comes time to sort out Taiwan. But it's known that from early on, the Chinese have been providing certain components that are useful for our military, raw materials, additionally buying a ton of Russian oil, which provides Russia with currency that it needs to buy other things, and now it's just gotten bigger. Additionally, the Chinese have probably given the go-ahead to North Korea to provide millions of artillery shells or a lot of ammunition to the Russians, also given the go-ahead and support to the Iranians to provide a lot of drones to the Russians. So that China has played a role from the start, and you can imagine that if Secretary Blinken is now saying it's a problem, that it's been a problem for a long time.
Expanding on that, many are noting aid is important to Ukraine given the Russia-China alliance, with the same being said for Israel as China is helping Iran weather sanctions by buying up oil, as you mentioned. And also at the same time, Beijing is upping aggression in the South China Sea and around Taiwan. Given that, how do you view China's role in all of this, expanding on your previous part?
Well, I think China is taking advantage of an opportunity. It's what they always do. When Russia invaded Ukraine, they, of course, set back for just a bit to see how this was going to play out. But as I said, from almost the beginning, they decided they would see what they could get out of it. And they like to see the Russians distracting the Americans, to put it mildly. And they're glad to have us pouring money into Ukraine, focusing on Western Europe. And by definition, you just cannot spend as much time looking at the Western Pacific, where China really has its eyes on. So they will take advantage of every opportunity. And you do see these countries, Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, Venezuela, Cuba, not nice countries, that they have an alignment of interests. There may be some friction between them, particularly the Chinese and the Russians, and to a degree the North Koreans. But at the end of the day, their strategic interests align, and it is a very troubling sort of coming together that we're seeing. And I think they're going to push that until they are stopped.
Now, when it comes to Blinken's upcoming China trip, which does come on the heels of Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen's trip there, what do you see coming out of his visit?
Oh, not much. I'm afraid that the Chinese will size up the Biden administration as ultimately people that it's not worth being afraid of. And what's some evidence of this? Well, the Chinese poured fentanyl into the U.S., and they've been doing it for about a decade. Last year, it killed over 70,000 Americans. And China could stop at any time they want. But what the Biden administration has done is set up a working group with the PRC to try and figure out what to do about fentanyl. Those are not serious people.
All right, Grant Newsham, retired colonel and senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy and author of When China Attacks. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
President Biden and former President Trump face Pennsylvania voters today in the presidential primaries. This sets the stage for the November general election, where Pennsylvania is anticipated to be a crucial battleground once again. NTD's Daniel Monahan has a closer look.
Temple University Associate Professor Michael Sansis says Pennsylvania is an incredibly important state.
There's only really a handful of states that are.
All right, Grant Newsham, retired colonel and senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy and author of When China Attacks. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
President Biden and former President Trump face Pennsylvania voters today in the presidential primaries. This sets the stage for the November general election, where Pennsylvania is anticipated to be a crucial battleground once again. NTD's Daniel Monahan has a closer look.
Temple University Associate Professor Michael Sansis says Pennsylvania is an incredibly important state.
There's only really a handful of states that are kind of pivotal in presidential elections.
The professor says that many voters live in deeply red or blue states that don't have as big an impact on deciding a race. Pennsylvania went for Trump in 2016 and Biden in 2020, both times by small margins.
So we're closely divided, we're also very big. So the way that the Electoral College works, the more states you win, the more electoral votes you get.
President Biden was in Pittsburgh last week.
U.S. Steel has been an iconic American company for more than a century.
Former President Trump told Pennsylvanians in mid-April that Americans need answers.
Because they're looking at the border and they're looking at inflation and they're looking at the economy, which is terrible.
Professor Sansa says the economy and immigration are two big issues on voters' minds.
Biden's folks trying to highlight the positives in the economy, it still doesn't seem to have really caught on.
Protest votes could play a role in the primaries. Those who are unhappy with how Biden is handling the Israel-Hamas war are urging Democrats to write uncommitted on their primary ballot, while Republicans who want to vote against former President Donald Trump still have the option to vote for former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley. Further down the ballot, voters will also select nominees in competitive primaries for Congress, the state legislature, and three statewide offices. Daniel Monahan, NTD News.
The Supreme Court shows sympathy for Starbucks. It heard oral arguments today on whether Starbucks should be forced to rehire union organizers. NTD's Virginia Gibson has more.
The Supreme Court seemed to side with Starbucks during oral arguments Tuesday. At issue, whether a lower court made a mistake in forcing Starbucks to rehire union organizing employees. Starbucks had fired the Memphis Seven, who invited a TV crew into a store to promote their unionization efforts. The National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB, then successfully convinced the lower court to force Starbucks to rehire them.
Why would the board get deference when the board doesn't deserve any deference and has no expertise on how equity should be weighed?
Attorney Lisa Blatt, arguing on behalf of Starbucks, says forcing Starbucks to do something is extraordinary and drastic. She believes the NLRB made an inappropriate request in this instance. If the NLRB wins, it'll be easier for them to intervene in similar cases. It may have more power over other companies. Justice Neil Gorsuch says that NLRB is not following the same standard other organizations follow.
In all sorts of alphabet soup agencies, we don't do this. The district courts apply the likelihood of success test as we normally conceive it. So why is this particular statutory regime different than so many others?
He suggests the NLRB shouldn't be an exception. If Starbucks wins the case, it'll be harder for the NLRB to help employees who want to unionize. After the arguments, the justices will deliberate and issue a final decision in the coming months. Virginia Gibson, NTD News.
Coming up, 24 people are arrested in a child sexting operation in California. The suspects include people in positions of public trust. And in the NBA playoffs, after a pair of thrilling finishes yesterday, the officiating has been the talk of the day. Dave Martin joins us to discuss when we come back. Welcome back. I'm Tiffany Meyer. A child sex predator sting operation in California leads to the arrest of 24 individuals, including a San Jose fire captain. Operation Spring Cleaning was spearheaded by the Sacramento County Sheriff's Office and is part of a nationwide program targeting internet crimes against children. NTD's Jason Blair has more, and a warning: this report contains subject matter and language some viewers may find disturbing.
A three-day operation involving 100 officers led to the arrest of 24 suspected child sex predators.
Because these predators are out there preying on our children.
Some of these guys are really righteous pedophiles that will hunt you.
Sheriff Cooper said among the arrests include several people in positions of public trust.
We arrested a San Jose firefighter who lives here in Sacramento, a Sunday school teacher, a United States Postal Service worker.
San Jose Fire Captain Spencer Parker was arrested during the operation. He has since resigned and is scheduled to be in court Wednesday morning. Sheriff Cooper said that during the operation, undercover detectives posed as children 13 years or younger on various social media platforms.
Suspects often directed these kids to commit sexual acts and/or ask for pornographic material. Some of the suspects would send pornographic material to our undercover officers.
Cooper said that many of them arranged to meet with who they believed to be children for sexual contact, leading to arrests. He also said there was no pattern of any specific age group, social, or economic background with the suspects. They ranged from their 20s to 70 years old.
I don't care how smart or how sophisticated you think your son or daughter is, an adult can manipulate a child, bottom line, period.
The sheriff urged parents to know what their kids are doing online.
parents on your children's phones, your social media platforms. You are the parent. It is not a democracy. You have to take charge. And think about this. This was 3 days. This stuff goes on 24/7, 365.
Some of the charges for the 24 suspects include contacting a minor with intent for sex, arranging to meet with a minor for sex, and the attempt lewd acts with a child under the age of 14. Jason Blair, NTD News.
And now for your sports news, we're joined by NTD's Dave Martin at the Sports Hub. Dave, the NHL playoffs are now in full swing with round one already underway. Now, the Las Vegas Golden Knights are the reigning champions. Are they expected to repeat?
No, I mean, they're generally in the top 5 to 7. I mean, most people have Carolina, Edmonton, Florida, and the New York Rangers in that order as a top four as far as betting odds to win the Stanley Cup title. Now, Carolina, they're a very balanced team. They've got a very tough first-round matchup with the Islanders, though, who are really peaking at the right time. Meanwhile, Edmonton, they got hot after replacing their head coach early in the season, and they have three-time MVP Connor McDavid, who notched 5 assists in the win last night. You can never count them out. Florida went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year, but they have a tough first-round matchup as well with Tampa Bay, which is looking to win their third Stanley Cup title in 5 years. They'll play game two tonight with Florida up 1-0 in that series. And finally, the Rangers. I mean, they have not won the Stanley Cup title in 3 decades, but they had the best record in the regular season. They play tonight against the Capitals. They've got a 1-0 lead in that series too.
Well, now shifting gears to the NBA, a couple of exciting finishes in last night's games with the Nuggets and Knicks winning, but some Lakers players expressed frustration afterwards over the officiating. What do you think will be the league's response?
Well, they usually fine players for criticizing the officiating in public, and that's nothing new for the playoffs. I mean, every game is magnified, every call is magnified because every game is so important. And this Nuggets-Lakers series, this is a big series. The Nuggets are the defending champions. The Lakers won it just a few years ago. Now, the Lakers also blew a 20-point lead in that game last night. So I would imagine they're somewhat frustrated about that, too. And I would also say that some of the calls that they're probably referring to, I can see their point on that. But the Lakers really bear some of the responsibility themselves. I mean, LeBron James and Anthony Davis ran that pick and roll really well in the first half. I was very surprised they got away from it in the second half. Now they're going back to LA down 2-0, and they've still got to win at least one game in Denver. That's if they win the next two in LA, if they're going to take this series.
Well, now in the Knicks versus Sixers game, a team spokesperson for Philadelphia says they'll be filing a grievance about the officiating during both games, 1 and 2 of the series. What are the chances the NBA would reverse the outcome of a playoff game?
I mean, I would say zero. I've never seen them do it in a regular season game. And if they say it's an officiating error, that's just the way it is. Maybe if there was a scoring error or there was some kind of clock error, they would do it. I think the crux of their grievance was all in that final 30 seconds of the game last night. I mean, Philly was up 5 with like 30 seconds left. All of a sudden, the Knicks hit a 3. Then they stole the inbounds pass and hit another 3. But it was a very physical, like 15-second period where several players hit the floor. There were no fouls called at all. So when the dust finally settled, they were down a point with like a few seconds left, and they ended up losing by 3. So it was kind of a crazy sequence there. It was pretty obvious they were upset about it too. Now tonight, moving on, we've got 3 games going on tonight. First of all, in the East, we've got the Pacers and the Bucks. The Bucks actually won the title 3 years ago. We've also got the Clippers and the Mavericks, plenty of star power in that series. But also the Timberwolves versus the Suns. Now the Suns had a very expensive team. They made some trades in the offseason, and all they got out of it was a number 6 seed. I think this will be a very interesting series here to see if they can beat the Timberwolves despite not having the home court advantage. So that's a game I'll definitely be watching tonight.
Well, Dave, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tiff.
An award-winning film depicting China's human rights abuses has hit the big screen on Capitol Hill. It delves into the life of a student at an elite Chinese university who risked his life and career to expose a nationwide persecution. NTD's Sam Wong has more.
Chinese government's own estimate is...
On Tuesday, the award-winning film Unsilenced hit the big screen on Capitol Hill. Based on actual events, The movie tells the story of a group of university students who risked their lives to expose a brutal nationwide persecution by the Chinese regime. The film follows the footsteps of Wang, a Falun Gong practitioner, and a jaded American journalist who finds himself lost in the industry he loves. Facing possible arrest, torture, and death, they must make a choice, remain silent, or tell the public the truth.
It probably deserves a wider distribution to let people know what the situation is in China.
I thought it was deeply informative. It was also really poignant and disturbing.
It just made me want to think about the people more in China, those who had the same belief as I do.
Falun Gong, also known as Falun Dafa, is a spiritual discipline based on the principles of truthfulness, compassion, and forbearance. On July 20, 1999, the Chinese Communist Party launched a nationwide persecution against the group, even mobilizing state-run media to defame its teachings.
No power is allowed to exist outside the party, and that's something that's characteristic of totalitarian regimes.
Unsilenced has received a string of honors, including the Audience Award at the 2021 Austin Film Festival. Reporting from Washington, D.C., Sam Wang, NTD News.
And that's all for today's news. For round-the-clock coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Good night.